piano singing his song. All the little birds on Jaybird Street love to hear the robin go tweet, tweet, tweet. Rockin' Robin, tweet, tweet, tweet. Rockin' Robin, tweet, tweet. Rockin' Robin, blow, rockin' Robin, cause we really gonna rock up tonight. Every little swallow, every chickadee, every little bird in the tall oak tree. The wise old owl, the big black crow, flap of their wings, singing go bird go. Rockin' Robin, tweet, tweet, rock, rock, rockin' Robin, tweet.
Welcome, everyone, to another edition of Community in Depth. Our friends from the Carpenter St. Croix Valley Nature Center are here, which means it's another hour of embarrassment for me with how little I know about nature. Anyway, we are so excited because Jessie Eckrode is here. She's a naturalist, which I want to learn more exactly what that is. And for the Carpenter St. Croix Valley Nature Center, she's their outreach program coordinator. Great to see you.
It's great to see you, too, Mo. It's been a while since I've been here. It has, I'm excited to chat.
Yay. So tell me what being a naturalist is, because I thought that was like somebody that went to a nudist colony.
Sure. You know, that's a common misconception, and I think the word is used that way often. People will use it to describe.
So when you said to your parents, I'm going to college to become a naturalist, they knew what you meant.
They knew what I meant. You know, the word can often be described or used to describe kind of, I'll say, alternative lifestyles. But in our field, being a naturalist is synonymous with being an environmental educator. You're a teacher, but you're teaching not in like a public school classroom. You're teaching in an outdoor setting most often, and you're teaching on subjects that are nature focused.
Excellent.
So that's what it means to be a naturalist.
And so that goes hand in hand with what you do as an outreach program coordinator.
Yes, absolutely. So our naturalist team at the Nature Center, a few of our staff specialize in doing the on-site education. So they work on-site, they get the kids in the schools out on buses, and they show the kids the great site that we have at Carpenter Nature Center. But unfortunately, there's a lot of schools that for budget reasons or because of busing shortages, things like that, can't get their students out to our site. So it's really important for us to be able to go to them. So I travel into schools to do environmental education, but I also go to a lot of other locations as well. I go out to libraries, I go to town festivals, we're going to a senior living community this
nice.
Next week. So pretty much anywhere there is a need or a want to learn more about nature, I will travel there and I will teach people as much as they can stand to listen to me.
And do you take some of your ambassadors with you that I have met?
I do, yeah. The majority of our outreach programming involves our animal ambassadors. People love live animals. It's so great to be able to see something up close that maybe you had only seen in a book before or knew was kind of in your backyard or in your neighborhood or in your community, but you'd never seen up close. It makes the environmental topics and the environmental issues that we talk about and that we face so much more personal to see that animal up close. It creates this connection where people say, I really love seeing this Blanding's turtle and I want to make sure that they continue to do well out in the wild. Or I really love this peregrine falcon or this hognose snake. To be able to see
maybe
that animal up
that,
close. Well, I love snakes. I know they're not the most cuddly for some people, but there are folks that do think that snakes are quite cute noodles.
So what are we going to talk about today? We are talking in March.
Yes, and I actually brought you a present today, Mo.
Excellent. So we can stop our interview now while I open it.
Right, yeah, it is a sweet treat. So this time, instead of bringing an animal ambassador with me.
Which actually, I love that too.
Right, but I figured good change of pace here. I brought you a jar of maple syrup that was made at Carpenter Nature Center.
Oh, Jessie, thank you.
You are welcome. It's just kind of a symbol that March is Maple Syrup Month, not only for Carpenter Nature Center, but also for a lot of other organizations or just even individuals in their yard that work to produce maple syrup. And so we have several programs throughout the month of March to teach people how to do this themselves. It's not a very complicated process to watch it and to do it. The tree biology behind why it works is a little bit more complicated, but it's fairly simple to just be able to get out there, collect sap, and then do the boiling to turn that sap into syrup.
So the sap is only from maple trees, or do all trees have sap?
All trees have sap, but it's the trees in the maple family that have that really sweet sap that we want to use to make this kind of syrup. There are a couple of other kinds of trees that people dabble with making syrup from, but they have a very different flavor. That stuff, though, that you like on your pancakes, that all comes from trees in the maple family. If you're getting it at the store, it's usually from an organization that taps sugar maple trees or red or silver maples. They have a pretty high sugar content in their sap. But at Carpenter Nature Center, we don't have very many of those high sugar trees. We actually tap mostly box elder trees, which are
what?
A member. Yeah, they're a member of the maple tree family. Not very many people know that. They've got a low sugar content to their sap, but all that means is we have to boil it a little bit longer, and it still creates this really sweet, kind of deep flavored, more earthy maple syrup, in my opinion.
Well, how exciting. So tell us how we can do this, and then tell us how you made that.
Sure, absolutely.
So do I have a tree, do you think, in my yard that I could start to tap?
If you have a type of maple tree in your yard and it's the correct size, we don't want to tap trees that are too small, because we want to make sure that those trees are nice and big and strong.
Okay.
To be able to basically support being able to let us have some of their sap without it being harmful to the tree. So if you have a tree from the maple family in your yard and it's wider than about a foot across,
okay,
you can put a tap in that tree. And that process is pretty simple. You can use, and what we use at Carpenter Nature Center, is just a hand drill that has a bit that's about the size of my thumb. You drill in about 2 inches into the tree.
Anywhere along the tree?
About waist high is where
waist
we like
high.
To go.
Okay.
And it's mostly related to ease of access for being able to hang a bucket to collect the sap.
Okay.
If you're tapping really far up, you know, you're not going to be able to access that well. If it's too far down on the ground, you can have issues with critters getting into
okay.
it. So about waist high is the ideal height to do that tap, to make that hole. So once you drill that hole in the tree, one of the pieces of equipment that you will need is what we call a tap. It's a spout. It's a metal spout that's made of aluminum that you gently push into that hole that you created in the tree. And it basically is like a spout then that the sap flows through. Those taps then have a hook on the bottom that you can hang a bucket on, and that sap flows out through the tree, or out of the tree, through the tap, and down into the bucket. And when that bucket's full, you can collect that sap. So that's kind of like the first half of the process, is collecting that sap.
So where do we get our little tap things?
Sure. Yep. We can call them taps or spiles, or you can refer to them as a spout. There are several different companies that make maple syruping equipment. So if you go online and you Google local maple syrup equipment, there's several in the area that produce that kind of more low-tech equipment that you can use in your backyard.
Okay. And then does it come gushing out?
You know, I wouldn't say gushing, but the rate of how fast the sap is flowing varies depending on the day and the conditions. Sometimes it's a really slow drip, but other days it drips so quickly that it is like a little tiny flow, and those buckets can fill up pretty quickly. Sometimes a 2-gallon bucket can fill up twice a day.
Well, what is the difference? What makes it flow versus drip?
Right. So one of the factors is the moisture that's in the soil. So if you are tapping a tree that's in maybe like a lower lying area where the water is all pooling, that means that is going to be flowing a lot more, because the roots of the tree are pulling in that water. In a drier place, you're not going to have quite as much of a flow. But the main reason that we collect sap in March and the main reason that the sap flows the way that it does is the freeze-thaw cycle during March. What we want for collecting the sap is below freezing temperatures at night and above freezing temperatures during the day. Like I said, the kind of biology process behind why it works in the trees is a little bit complicated, but basically that freeze-thaw creates a pressure in the trees that forces this sugary sap up from the roots of the tree through the trunk and out in the branches to help the buds open up in spring.
So by us tapping the tree doesn't hurt it, then it doesn't stop that process of budding?
Right, yep. If we're collecting sap responsibly, meaning that we're not collecting too much of the sap and that we're collecting it in a way that is not going to be introducing icky stuff into the tree like bacteria or viruses or fungus, it doesn't harm the tree at all. It's very similar to how you can have your blood drawn at the doctor, and as long as they don't take too much, your body just produces some more and you're good to go. Very similar with the maple trees.
So if we take that spout thing out, then it doesn't come out anymore.
Right. Okay. Yep. That spot, that
hole close
heals.
Up?
Yeah, it does. And you can actually then in following years kind of see these tap scar areas where you had tapped the tree previously, and it doesn't really hurt the tree at all. It's the same as if you get some kind of owie on your skin and your body heals it right up. You might have a mark there long term, but it doesn't affect the way that your body functions at all.
So should we tap it in the same place every year or no?
No, actually it's best to be able to see and find those old tap scars and tap in a new location, because that scarred tissue means that the sap doesn't flow quite right in those areas.
What is sap?
Sap is basically a mixture of sugar and water. Okay? So to understand the sap for the tree and the maple syruping process, we have to talk about what the tree does throughout the course of the year.
Let's do that, please.
Sure. So during the spring and summer months, we've got these nice, big, beautiful, green, leafy trees,
yes.
Right? And during those months of the year, what's happening with the tree is that the roots are sucking up water and nutrients from the soil. Then that material is being transported up through the trunk of the tree, out into the branches, and into the leaves, where the leaves use that water, those nutrients, and the energy from the sun, as well as the air around the tree, to make the sap. They create this sugary substance using the process of photosynthesis.
The leaves do that?
The leaves do that. We say that the leaves are like the kitchen of the tree because they make the food. That's what's going on in photosynthesis.
I didn't know that.
Yes, you'll remember it now, Mo. The leaves are the kitchen of the tree. And not just trees, other plants too. It's those green leaves that are creating the food for the tree. So during those warm months, those leaves are busy making food, feeding the tree. And then when it starts to cool down in autumn, what those leaves do is they start sending that really rich sugary sap back down through the tree, through the branches, down through the trunk, and it gets stored in the roots over winter. And then that stored sugary sap, that stored food, is sent back up through the tree after winter is over to provide energy for the new buds to begin to open up.
So the sun helps that process too then?
Absolutely. Yep. So the sun helps, and it helps the tree all year long. It helps the leaves to create food during the warmer months of the year. But then the sun also helps to warm the trees during the month of March to create that freeze-thaw cycle that makes the sap start to move. Because the sap doesn't move in the winter. It's frozen solid.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Wow. So we collected some sap.
Yep.
When do we know that we should just stop collecting from a certain tree?
Well, you know, the tree will tell you in most cases.
Okay.
It will stop producing sap. The sap will stop flowing because once the buds on the tree kind of burst and start to open up, that sap quits flowing because the tree has done its job in sending that stored food up to the buds. And also you'll start to notice that the sap that's coming out of the tree is kind of a weird cloudy color.
Okay.
And so between that and knowing seeing that there's less sap flowing out, that's when you know it's done. And that's usually about mid-April, but it depends on how long those freeze-thaw temperatures are maintained.
So once we have collected the sap, then what do we do?
Right. So when you collect it from the tree, it's not automatically syrup. A lot of people are under that misconception that you can just put that tap in the tree and have pancakes right then and there. But the sap is actually mostly water. For the trees that we tap at Carpenter Nature Center, it's only about 1 or 2% of that sap is sugar. Now, syrup, on the other hand, like in this jar that I have here, this is 66% sugar in this concentration. So to be able to get it from that sap to this syrup, you have to boil it.
Basically,
you're trying to boil off that water to get it down to a concentration where it's this nice kind of thick and kind of golden brown syrup. So for example, for our box elder trees, to be able to create 1 gallon of syrup,
okay,
we have to collect about 85 or 86 gallons of sap and boil off over 80 gallons of water into water vapor to make 1 gallon of syrup. That's part of the reason why real maple syrup is a little bit spendy.
Yes.
Yeah, it's not like the fake
Aunt
maple
Jemima.
Syrup. Yeah, that's actually corn syrup with a maple flavor. Real maple syrup is expensive because it's a very labor-intensive process. But boy, is it fun. It's super fun.
So thank you. That's really awesome.
Yes, so there's a lot of love in this jar.
Yes, no kidding. No kidding. And then so you boil it, and how do you know, does it turn that color and you know it's ready?
You know, usually what we do is we actually measure the boiling temperature of the sap. So the boiling temperature of water, different than the boiling temperature of something that has a really, really high sugar content. So we actually just measure what temperature it's boiling at, and we know based on that temperature that it's boiling at. We use something like a candy thermometer that can measure really high temperatures. We know based on the temperature that it's boiling at.
So we can still do this at home ourselves.
Oh, absolutely. I know that whole explanation that I gave sounds a little bit complicated, but once you get out into the field and actually see it being done, it's really not that complicated. So we actually teach people how to do this at the Nature Center, and we've got several programs throughout the month of March to teach you how to do that. Yes, of course. So we have 2 public programs on March 22nd and March 29th. Both of those are from 1 to 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Everybody's welcome to sign up for that one. But they're weekends, so the whole family can come out. We also have 3 kind of specialty programs. March 13th, again, from 1 to 3 o'clock in the afternoon, that's the best time of day to have the sap flowing, is our homeschool syruping program. So if you are a family that homeschools your children, you're welcome to sign up for that program on March 13th. And probably my favorite is our preschool story time that goes over the maple syruping process, which is on March 20th. That's a Friday. And that's from 10 to 11 in the morning. That's
and
a
these
super
are
fun
open
one.
To the public. Or,
yes, they are.
That's so great. Jessie, thanks for coming in.
You are so welcome.
Wow.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yes, I can't wait to go home and have pancakes with my new syrup. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
Jessie Eckrode, she's the Outreach Program Coordinator for the St. Croix Valley Nature Center, and we're so grateful that she came in today to share all she knows. And you are listening to another edition of Community in Depth on AM 1460. 60 and FM 97.7 KDWA in Hastings.
He rocks in the treetop all the day long, hopping and a bopping and a singing.